This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about civil partnership law. I am here today with barrister Mr. Ian Wheaton from Number 18 Chambers in Southampton. Ian is a strategic and practical barrister who practices across multiple disciplines of law, and he has extensive experience in family law. Interestingly, before becoming a barrister, Ian spent several years teaching and lecturing on various areas of law. Thank you for joining us, Ian.
Good morning. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Not too bad. A bit bunged up, but apart from that, not too bad. Right, so civil partnership law, Ian. We are aware that this year, or last year, should I say, on the 2nd of December 2019, new legislation came into force to say that opposite sex couples living together can enter into something which is called a civil partnership. So we're going to talk about today, what is a civil partnership? What does that mean? And how does it affect people? What's the difference between being in a civil partnership to being in a marriage? And things like that. I mean, one of the interesting things that has come to light in statistics is that couples living together that are not married are the fastest growing family type, with the number in the UK more than doubling over the last 20 years to about 3.4 million. And in 2017, 48% of children were born into unmarried couples. Big numbers, big statistics, really.
Big statistics. And interestingly, in terms of the alternative concept of marriage, in 2016, which is the last year that statistics are available for, there were just shy of 250,000 weddings. And compare that to 1972 or the mid-70s when there were around 500,000 weddings.
Wow.
And not only that, but out of that 250,000, less than a quarter, at 24%, I think, were church weddings. So three quarters were civil ceremonies. And so there's a massive trend for moving away from traditional church weddings and into alternative arrangements. Obviously, the other three quarters would have been civil ceremonies with registry.
At the registry office.
Yes,
I had one of those.
Or other similarly authorised places. I think people can get married at football grounds anywhere with a licence. So there is a massive change in the way that people are choosing to be together. And the concept of a civil partnership isn't that new. We've had it since 2004. It's about 15 years old.
For same-sex couples.
And we've just had this variation last month that enables opposite-sex couples to have the same options, because the government felt that there was some kind of imbalance between same-sex couples having the option of either marriage, which they've been able to do since 2013, and or a civil partnership. So the obvious choice for the government was to say, let's open everything up to everybody and to have civil partnerships available for opposite sex couples as well as same sex.
And then there was, on the news, there was the couple that were the first couple to go and enter into a civil partnership who were actually campaigning for the law to be changed for opposite sex couples to be able to enter into a civil partnership. So what is meant by a civil partnership? What do we mean by that term?
Well, a civil partnership is exactly what it says on the tin. It's a partnership that isn't a religious wedding, but it's a civil partnership between either a same-sex couple or an opposite-sex couple, and it enables them to effectively register their commitment, their relationship. And it, more importantly perhaps, it gives them rights that they would never otherwise have if they remain unmarried. because we often hear the concept of a common law marriage.
Yes, we've got podcasts actually of common law, the myth of common law marriage,
absolutely,
husband and wife, yeah. And then we've got obviously the cohabitation, which is doing nothing, just living together. And this is really saying, okay, we want to formalise what we have, but we don't want to get married.
They want to get married in the religious sense or in the traditional sense. For a number of people, there is a significant amount of patriarchy attached to a traditional wedding, in as much as it's traditional for brides to be given away by one man, the father, to another man, the husband, and almost like a parcel being passed from one to another.
Well, women look after men, you know, Ian.
Absolutely.
That's my view, so.
Absolutely. So this, the modern concept is to effectively reflect equality and autonomy within a relationship.
Yes.
And it's about choice. If people want to have a choice, if they want to get married, if they want to get married in the church, if they want to get married in a registry office.
Or if they just want to say, listen, we want to formalise this.
Yeah.
So how do you register a civil partnership?
You, in the same way that you would attend a registry office to register a civil marriage. So a registrar of births, marriages and deaths would enter your civil partnership within the register. What you don't have to do, if you don't want to, you can if you do want to, but what you don't have to do is exchange vows.
Right.
You don't have to
witnesses.
Sing songs. You don't have to have, you do have to have two witnesses.
Right, so, one each.
Yep, effectively, in order to show that it's been witnessed, for want of a better expression.
Right.
All you have to do is make an appointment, arrive, have the registration completed, in the same way, perhaps, that you might register a birth of a child.
Yes, yes. I mean, I had a registry office marriage because we didn't want the religious side to what was going on. But so when you go to a registry office to register, say, look, we want to register a marriage, the registrar will sit and interview each person independently to make sure that it's a genuine marriage, it's genuinely a relationship. I mean, you know, because there's been so many sham marriage stories over the years. Do they do the same with a civil partnership? Will they do that? Will they sit you down and say, right, and we need to make sure this is genuine, that this is real? Because, I mean, I've got a British passport and so does my husband. And when I tell you, we got pretty grilled up independently.
Absolutely.
As to, is this a real relationship? Is this a genuine marriage that's taking place? And I couldn't quite understand why. Because I thought, well, obviously, I'm not marrying him for his passport and he's not marrying me for my passport because we both got a British passport.
Well, if one of the people intending to engage in the relationship is subject to immigration control. So if at the moment, and I know things are changing with Brexit
this year,
so, and things have already changed as of January the 31st, in as much as we have now left the European Union.
Yes.
But I think under the transition arrangements until the end of this year, 2020, people from the European Economic Area are still regarded as being having free movement within the United Kingdom. Let's say once 2020 is finished and people...
I think there's a deadline of 22nd of February, is there?
As far as I'm aware,
2021.
Yes, that's right. So in about a year's time, anybody from outside the UK will have to satisfy the registrar that they have the right to be in this country obtaining what might be regarded as a green card in the States.
Yes.
In order to obtain residential status. And so the registrar will ask some questions if questions arise from the notice of the intention to register the partnership.
The civil partnership.
Because if you have to give 28 days notice, one of the purposes of that 28 days is to make sure that there aren't any issues arising that may cause a problem for the registration at the time that it takes place, and as well as giving opportunities.
So they could have the same questioning process as registering a formal marriage.
They could. This is a serious.
Because the law is free to do that.
The law is free to do that, and this is a serious commitment that people give. And importantly, it confers upon people in a civil partnership the same legal rights that they would have if they were married.
And that's my next question, because that's the big question and lots of people want to know, what are the main differences between a civil partnership and a marriage?
Well, in a civil partnership...
And that's a big question, so let's...
In a civil partnership, you are then conferred, you then have the same benefits that married people will have in relation to inheritance, in relation to obtaining Social Security or support
taxes,
from the...
In relation to
HMRC and income tax. So inheritance tax, so all of the married person's exemptions would apply to an individual or to parties of a civil partnership because you have the same rights and obligations. Once you are a civil partner, you have the same rights and obligations as somebody who's married.
Is there anything that you don't have in a civil partnership that you would have in a marriage or vice versa?
In a word, no.
That settles that one.
The only real difference is that if the relationship comes to an end and that's as a result of one of the parties being unfaithful within the relationship, unlike a divorce where adultery can be cited as a reason for the divorce.
We're moving away from that now.
The concept of no fault divorce, but at the moment, adultery is a ground for divorce.
Yes.
Adultery isn't a ground for dissolution of a civil partnership.
Really?
But it would simply come within the ambit of unreasonable behaviour.
Right. But that's interesting. I wonder why they took that bit out then. I wonder why they said, well, you know what, if you're married, you want to get a divorce on the grounds of adultery, tick, yeah, there's a box for that.
Mm.
But if you're in a civil partnership and adultery has occurred, then there's no box to tick there. But unreasonable behaviour, like you say, is really the main cited
In reality,
reasons.
My experience over the last 20 years of divorces, and there are very few defended divorces, and the ones that are so rare that they make the headlines.
Yes.
But in divorces, most people, even if there has been an allegation of adultery, because of the denials that take place. Most people just tick the unreasonable behaviour box.
And they're guided by the lawyers. Let's just say, you know, irreconcilable
differences.
Let's not throw spit at each other on paper.
Absolutely.
And you're right. I've done a fair amount of divorces, and very rarely, even though our client may be aware that there is another party on the other side, will they put the name down on the paper? This is an adultery. This is the name and address of the adulterer, because then they get brought into the divorce proceedings, Ian, don't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a whole new podcast. But in this case, that's very interesting. I mean, but we're not saying that if there was adultery in a civil partnership, that you couldn't end a civil partnership because of it. We're just saying that
if it's adultery,
there's no box to tick on the wonderful court forms that everybody has to satisfy.
And it keeps the temperature down, because as soon as there's an allegation of adultery, then there's a denial, and then there's a whole separate argument about
true.
Who did what on such and such a time.
And then
location.
They take your eye off the ball, in the sense that, look, this has to come to an end. Everybody has to go their own ways financially and in terms of emotionally. And if we're sitting there arguing about, yes, you did cheat, and no, you didn't, or no, I didn't cheat, you're not really, focusing on dissolving the main areas of the relationship. So how do you end a civil partnership? Do you literally fill in the petition?
You fill in the form. It's a dissolution as opposed to a divorce, and you simply fill in the application for a dissolution.
It's the same form as a divorce form, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
It's literally just dissolution because that's been on there obviously for a while due to the fact that same-sex couples were able to enter into civil partnerships for many years. Right, okay. I mean, so we've said there's no actual difference whatsoever between a civil partnership and the marriage, apart from the fact that you've got religious ceremonies attached to a marriage, if that's the way you choose to go. And you can't tick a box that will say adultery was a reason for ending your civil partnership, if indeed it was. So, I mean, I guess the question, are there any benefits to being in a civil partnership over being married, or vice versa? There isn't really.
There aren't really any material differences. It's simply a matter of choice. It's to reflect the fact that so many people, as you said at the introduction, are cohabiting. And that has a cohabiting.
48% of children being born into unmarried couples.
Absolutely.
That's almost half. It's a very big number.
It's a huge number. And that is a worry for the government. Because the big concern, obviously at my end of the dealing with, in my professional capacity, with the family law aspect. I only deal with people whose families are breaking up.
Yes.
And so dealing with who, or the child arrangements, so who the children will live with and who they will spend time with.
And also when it comes to dividing the finances.
Absolutely.
Because if you're married and you're getting a divorce and you're transferring property over to one partner, then that can be done because of the divorce. But if you're not married...
If you're not married, it's an absolute
minefield. It's a nightmare. And yes, well, it's effectively, you can't gift the property, really. I mean, again, this is another podcast, but you'd have to be a transfer of property, then with taxes to pay and all sorts goes on, doesn't it?
It would have to be a transfer of the property. And so that comes under the concept of inheritance. If somebody died, then if the property was in joint names, then it would pass to the survivor in any event.
Yes.
If there were joint tenants. But the big problem with unmarried couples is they don't anticipate that they're going to separate. So they don't enter into any deed of trust when they buy property.
Yes.
And they may buy property in joint names, they may buy property in one person's sole name, and they're very surprised to learn when they get to the end of their relationship that the property belongs to whoever it is in the name of.
Yes, if you don't have a deed of trust, we've also covered actually in cohabiting relationships.
Yeah.
It's a big, big area. And, you know, there is a whole stigma, on asking your partner to sign a document that says... Mm. They're holding half of the property in trust for you if the mortgage is solely going into their name and if the property is solely going into their name. But these are big realities which lots of people, should be considering that aren't. Because we see a lot of cases where there's no deed of trust.
Absolutely.
The property is solely in one party's name, or parents have helped out with deposits, and those deposits are now swallowed up because
they
there's a bitter
the
argument.
Yeah.
Or it's all been done on goodwill.
Yeah.
And
goodwill counts for nothing in court.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you see. I mean, interestingly, when civil partnership was first established, I was having conversations with various other legal persons, legal bodies, and the conversation, why? Why does it have to even exist?
Mm.
But actually, and again, when it revived itself in December last year, and it was all over the news that there was a first opposite-sex civil partnership going on, and again, I had the same, why? Why don't you just go and get married? But actually, I understand it, because if you don't want that, because I had, as I said, a marriage in a registry, if you don't want the religious aspect attached to it, that's the only reason... Really?
Or even in a civil marriage, given that 3/4 of marriages in the last year they had statistics for, 2016, were non-religious marriages, they were civil registry office type marriages, even those, there has been a massive decline in the number of people who are even committing to that kind of relationship.
Mm.
And the government is really worried about the possible... evaporation of the concept of marriage. So by extending the civil partnership option, they're reflecting practices all around the world, because if there are foreign civil partnerships, they can be recognised and registered in this country. Because even in fairly religious areas of the world, like South America, which is a largely Catholic area, they recognise what was referred to as stable unions between parties who aren't married.
Is that the equivalent of our
in Brazil.
Myth of common law?
Well, a stable union in Brazil, for argument's sake, is equivalent to a civil partnership. So even
right.
countries where you wouldn't imagine that they entertain the concept
of... You wouldn't,
of,
actually. I wouldn't
no.
think Brazil would have...
And Eastern Europe, where there are, again, largely Catholic and largely...
So we've fallen behind as the UK.
We had, to a certain extent, even places like Colombia or lots of Central American countries recognise the concept of people not formalising their relationship. And the big problem with not formalising a relationship is you don't formalise what happens at the end of a relationship.
Yes, and that could be when one party passes away.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't have to necessarily mean that, it's because you've fallen out and you're going your own ways.
Yeah.
Say if one party unfortunately falls ill or passes away. What happens? I mean, that person's family, extended family, brothers, sisters, parents, cousins will have a bigger claim to their assets or the assets that you've jointly potentially established than you will as their partner, because you haven't got the deed of trust in place, you don't have a civil partnership, you're not married.
Yeah.
key things.
Ironically, the only area where there was an increase in the number of weddings in 2016 was in men over 60 and women over 55. So people who have probably been in relationships or marriages previously and either been widowed or divorced.
Yeah.
And so there's inevitably, in a lot of cases, a tension between the offspring of one of the parties to the marriage and the new spouse. And similarly, if it's predicted that something like 84,000 civil partnerships could take place this year.
Yes, that's what the Financial Times have reported, haven't they? They're up to, they're expecting about 84,000 in 2020.
Then they're anticipating that will be on top of the 250,000 odd weddings that currently exist in any event. So what the government is trying to do is get more people into formalised relationships in order that there won't be so much chaos, both financial and family chaos,
yes,
when and if, or if and when that relationship breaks down.
Or comes to an end because a party passes away. And,
absolutely.
And we've got time for one more question, and you know, it's a big question, and I think that, again, there could be a whole new discussion around this question. And it's, if we were in a civil partnership, will I have equal rights over my partner's assets and pension when he or she dies? Which is exactly what we're saying.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a civil partnership, you've got the equal rights.
Yes.
If that person passes away or, you know, gets gravely ill, you need to have power of attorney over their assets.
If you need power of attorney, you can apply for power of attorney in any event, whether you're a civil partner or a spouse or not.
And what do we mean by, let's dissect what we mean by power of attorney.
So if an individual is losing capacity through either
disability, physical or mental disability, you can have charge.
You can apply for power of attorney over their assets, and there are very strict, very, very strict rules on the application for power of attorney, because obviously if you suddenly have complete control over your spouse's assets, then there is a big concern that that control could be used improperly.
Yes,
it will be unintentionally.
And the Office of Public Guardian, which I'm sure we can cover in another podcast, will actually grant that power of attorney
absolutely.
And be sort of the policing, government's policing arm to making sure it's not abused.
Yeah.
But the
difference with inheritance, for argument's sake, that's probably an area where people would be most concerned. So if a person was to die intestate in that they hadn't made a will, then if you weren't married, then the assets wouldn't go automatically to the partner.
Yes,
the partner,
or if you're not in a civil partnership.
Yeah. So the partner, and so until the concept of a civil partnership, the partner would have to make an application under some 1975 legislation to show that they were dependent upon that person. They would have to make an application to the court to get some of the inheritance to satisfy their dependency.
But if you're in a civil partnership, have rights over the assets and pensions when he or she passes away.
You have the same rights as a married person would have.
I'm sure that's music to a lot of people's ears.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, that's been very, very informative. Thank you ever so much for your time. That's all we've got time for. So what we're going to say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at www.getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.